Hello, I'm Jill Burridge, and today I'm joined by Nick Strudwick, who will be very well known to you because Nick is one of the editors of our programmes, News Extra. But today you're in here because you've chosen one of your favourite books.
Yes, that's true, that's true.
Which is Cider with Rosie by Laurie Lee.
That's correct, yes, actually.
So why did you choose this one to talk about?
Well, interesting. I mean, I've always loved the book, and love's probably the right word, actually. I remember the first time I read it, which was a long time ago. It was published in 1959, and it couldn't have been very many years after that I read it for the first time. And I was immediately taken aback by the opening, actually, the sort of poetry of it and the way it flowed, and the evocation of the period in which he was writing. So this is The First Night, and you've got to imagine Laurie Lee was three. He obviously remembered very little about life before he was three, and they'd lived in, I understand, a rather squalid condition somewhere in Gloucestershire. And then when he was three, they moved to a cottage in the Forest of Dean, which is where he lived for another 17 years.
I was set down from the carrier's cart at the age of three, and there, with a sense of bewilderment and terror, my life in the village began. The June grass amongst which I stood was taller than I was, and I wept. I had never been so close to grass before. It towered above me and all around me, each blade tattooed with tiger skins of sunlight. It was knife-edged, dark, and a wicked green, thick as a forest and alive with grasshoppers that chirped and chattered and leapt through the air like monkeys. I was lost and didn't know where to move. A tropic heat oozed up from the ground, rank with sharp odours of roots and nettles. Snow clouds of elder blossom banked in the sky, showering me with the fumes and flakes of their sweet and giddy suffocation. High overhead ran frenzied larks, screaming, as though the sky were tearing apart.
It is amazing writing, isn't
absolutely,
it? It is
absolutely.
Very poetic.
Yeah, and it doesn't stop through the book. I mean, the whole thing is written beautifully, I think.
Yes.
It tells of his first 17 years, his first 20 years of life. He went when he was three and left when he was 20, 17 years later, just before the Second World War was due to start. The book would stand on its own as a sort of social history of that period, and all the wonderful things. Well, you think it's wonderful. It wasn't as lovely as it appeared to be. And to be honest, it probably wasn't as peaceful and pleasant as Laurie Lee painted it. But I think we allow him that because his memories were basically very, very warm. But what lifts it above that just being a social history is his writing, obviously. The poetry, he's a poet anyway, and his poetry that flows through it, his descriptions and some of the characters. We'll talk about perhaps one or two of the characters in a little while's time. But that's what grabbed me about the book. And it's one of those books that I go back to periodically. I mean, once in a while, I sit down and want to read the whole thing because it's not very long. It's just about 230 pages or something. So you can read it pretty quickly and it does flow. Once you start reading it, you really don't want to stop. And I can do that once in a while. But also I can dip into it because I know bits about some of the characters and I'll think, I want to read about Aunt Trill. So I put that bit. And it's one of those things. But for me, it's if I'm a bit low, a depressed-ish, you know, and I want to be cheered up, there are three things that I can do. One is to read a book or a bit of a book that I love, and this would certainly come into that category. Read some poetry, or probably most of all, listen to music. Those are the three things that I find bring me back to kind of a normality, if being cheerful is normal for me. I don't know. But certainly this is one of the books and certain passages. So that's what it means to me, and that's why I think it's a great, great book.
The characters, as you say, are beautifully drawn. I think particularly for me, I mean, Laurie had four sisters.
Yes.
And a brother.
Yes.
And then a baby followed on after
that's
he
correct,
was born.
That's correct.
For me, I was going to say the strongest character is the mother.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Who is delightful.
Yeah.
You know, I think myself of, gosh, how would I cope with that number
well,
of children?
Well, I know.
And stay in the conditions that they are having to deal with,
yeah.
Because life is not easy.
No. And it wasn't a sort of mansion, it was a fairly rough cottage they lived in.
Yes, and food was hard to come by.
Absolutely. And of course, her husband had left her.
Yes.
Her husband moved away when I don't know, when before Laurie was born, I think, or just, no, just after he was born, and never saw him again.
No.
So she was left on her own.
At a time when there weren't any benefits, etc.
Absolutely.
But so, she is a very warm, loving
person. She is a very, very
person,
warm woman,
isn't
yeah.
she?
Could I read a little bit about her?
Yes.
This is, I love this bit, really. This is when, it's about Laurie when he was still very young, about four, and he was still sleeping in his mother's bed.
Yes.
And he describes this, there's a lovely picture which I wish I could show you.
Wonderful.
And then there's a little bit later when he's mortified when his younger brother supplants
arrives.
Him as the bedmate of the mother, and he has to go and sleep in the big room with his two big brothers. And he hates that.
Yes.
And he thinks I'll never ever get back to sleeping with my mother.
He hates change, doesn't he? School is in equal shock.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's got ousted out of Ma's bed, and he's then sent to school.
Yeah, and he gets used to school quite well and easily early on because he's in the small room with the little ones. And then when he gets a bit older, he is sent to the big room, it's called, where all the big boys are, including his older brother, who is a bit bossy. And his older brother is very clever.
Yes.
I don't suppose he could have written a book like this, mind you, but he was... So poor old Laurie is sent up to the big room with all these. We all remember that.
Yes.
You know, moving on a stage in school was not easy.
No.
And the teacher in the big school was a lot different from the sort of loving teacher in the first school.
Very much so, wasn't she?
Yeah, yes. She ruled
her
a lot of.
Vicious.
She was very vicious, absolutely. Yeah. I know. So that's, you're quite right. He doesn't like change. And so the whole of this book really is about the unchanging tenor of the life that he led in these idyllic times, for him, idyllic times of the 20s. But there's some black bits in the book as well.
Well, yes, I mean, he has periods of illness too, doesn't he? And you're very conscious that at times he got close to death.
Yes, he had this fever, which he was, no antibiotics. And I don't know what it was, the fever, I don't think it says, but it's probably something like scarlet fever or something, I don't know. But
it's a precarious existence, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So he was really, really, certainly very ill. And there were things going on in the village that, we don't want to talk about particularly, but there were nasty things going in under the woodshed, as it were. You know?
Yes.
So it was a tough old life, but he loved it. And I think it affected him for the rest of his life, actually. I really do. I think it was something he always went back to in his mind. Huge effect on him, but it just there's so many bits that I could read the whole book to you, but I haven't got time to do that.
No, you were mentioning the social history aspect of it, and I suppose one of the passages that stands out for me in terms of that is the description of wash day.
Yes.
And many of our listeners will remember Mondays being wash day.
That's right.
And of course, if you didn't, they didn't have washing machines or anything like that, inevitably.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's this brilliant description of the changing of the bed and all the washing that was scrubbed and, manipulated by hand and then squeezed and all rinsed and goodness me, when you think about doing that
and all the steam.
Yes, yes, they were boiling clothes.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Well,
yes.
Oddly enough, I remember my grandmother who was a little woman. She was about 4'10" and wiry and could be quite nasty, actually, but on the whole, she wasn't. But she did this. She would wash the sheets herself by hand, this tiny woman in the bath. A tin bath. They didn't have other than a tin bath, and then she would actually tread all over them to sort of get the suds out, to get the dirt out, and then rinse them. I've seen her do it, and they were just extraordinary.
Yes.
So that's something of what would have happened there. We must have had a tough old life, there's no doubt about that.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And education, as school develops, I mean, education isn't the priority. They treated it as a bit of a joke, didn't they?
Yep,
education,
yep,
and,
yep.
And they certainly got the better of this rather vicious teacher.
Oh, absolutely.
On
yeah.
several occasions.
They did indeed, yeah.
The great day came, a day of shimmering summer with the valley outside in a state of leafy levitation. Crabby Bee was at her sourest, and Spadge Hopkins had enough. He began to writhe in his desk and roll his eyes and kick with his boots and mutter, "She'd better look out there, Crabby Bee. She'd better, that's all. I can tell you." We didn't quite know what the matter was in spite of his meaning looks. Then he threw down his pen, said, "Sod it all," got up and walked to the door. "And where are you going, young man?" "May I ask?" said Crabby, with her awful leer. Spadge paused and looked her straight in the eye. "If it's any business of yourn."
And then there was the other occasion where they used any excuse to get out of the classroom. And so if there was a funeral passing by, they suddenly decided that you know, "Oh, that's my distant aunt."
Yes, yes,
and
yes,
they would
yes,
all exactly. exit
yes,
and
yes.
follow the coffin.
Yes, exactly. She must have been
despite the fact they didn't even know who it was. Well,
she must have been an aunt to an immeasurable number
of
people.
It was being carried out. But you do get, as the book progresses, this sense of the impending war,
you do certainly. Of course, Laurie, having left, he left the village in 1937, I think it was, no, 5, 35, and he did go to fight in the Spanish Civil War, and there's some wonderful writing about that too.
That's a separate book, isn't it? Called book. I Stepped Out that's One correct. Midsummer
yes,
Morning.
Yes, the impending doom of the war is present, most certainly, and then of course they hear of the death of his father. The news comes through, and his mother just faded away and died when she heard that, which is kind of sad.
Tender and sad, yes.
And then, of course, there's the meeting with Rosie. But it is the name of the book, Cider with Rosie. And this is when he's getting to the age when boys become kind of interested in things other than football and other
sports.
Exactly.
We went a long way to the bottom of a field where a wagon stood half loaded. Festoons of untrimmed grass hung down like curtains all around it. We crawled underneath, between the wheels, into a herb-scented cave of darkness. Rosie scratched about, turned over a sack, and revealed a stone jar of cider. "It's cider," she said. "You went to drink it, though. Not much of it, any rate." Huge and squat, the jar lay on the grass like an unexploded bomb. We lifted it up, unscrewed the stopper, and smelt the whiff of fermented apples. I held the jar to my mouth and rolled my eyes sideways like a beast at a waterhole. "Go on," said Rosie. I took a deep breath. Never to be forgotten that first long, secret drink of golden fire, juice of those valleys and of that time, wine of wild orchards, of russet summer, of plump red apples, and Rosie's burning cheeks. Never to be forgotten, or ever tasted again.
I think that's a wonderful way to finish, Nick. Thank you very much indeed for introducing us to the pleasures of Laurie Lee's Cider with Rosie.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
The excerpts in that audiobook review were played by kind permission of Calibre Audio, which is a specialist library which provides audiobooks on single CDs or MP3s.
The music accompanying this edition of the Talking Bookshelf is called Good Times. It was composed and recorded by Goffby of Kenilworth, who's very generously given us permission to use his music.